Welcome to Safety Sisters, the podcast about the people who keep you safe at events and beyond. In this episode, I get to chat to Becca Willis, Assistant Director of Athletics, Game Operations and Championships at Duke University in North Carolina. Becca discusses her unusual career path into crowd safety at events, how she designs event plans, applies her background in biomedical engineering to planning, risk and data analysis, and how her team work with students and student bodies to manage crowds. We only scratch the surface of Becca's extensive experience and knowledge, so I look forward to inviting her back very soon for part two. I hope you enjoy. I'm absolutely transfixed by all of your stories and all of your experience in your work at Duke University as Assistant Director of Athletics, Game Operations and Championships, which I can't wait to hear more about. So my first question for you, Becca, is how did you get to where you are today? What brought you into the magical events industry?
Thanks so much, Ethan, and thrilled to be on the podcast. Long-time listener, first-time caller, right, as we go through. So, I've been to the UK once, so hope to go back.
Yay.
Sometime soon, but we'll see. My journey into the magical world of events is probably going to be a very unique story as we go. And so my background actually is in engineering. Former athletic director used to introduce me to people as the most overeducated facility and event manager you would probably ever meet. When I was going to graduate school to get my doctorate in biomedical engineering, I promise there are tie-ins. also at Duke University, I really started getting to work in events and crowd management and crowd behavior through various positions with Duke Athletics, which is where I work now. So at Duke University, or anyone who's familiar with college sports in the US, Duke University is most well known for its basketball team and the ruckus environment inside our basketball stadium, which is Cameron Indoor Stadium. Our student section is known as the Cameron Crazies for a reason.
I love that.
And so what many people don't know is that our student sections, our undergraduates and our graduate students, those sections are actually run by the students themselves with supervision, with adult supervision. But they're run and organized by the students, and there's a full structure and organization for how they're run. And so I got my start in events by working with the graduate student group that runs the annual ticket camp out for graduate student tickets. They spend 36 hours camping out, getting their names checked off a list, and being entered into a lottery to then win season tickets. So my first event that I ever ran, I was technically logistics chair for that event. And as a result, scheduling all of our police, our EMS coverage, getting the right number of portable restrooms, getting ordering light towers because we were in this dark corner of a parking lot and one of the places we were had like no lights. So I was, I was 24 years old doing all of this for the first time for an event with like 2,000 to 2,500 people living basically in a campsite for 36 hours. And so went from doing that, continuing to work with the group, and then actually running the graduate student section inside Cameron and overseeing the staff of ushers that did that. Then my boss, Bob Weissman, here in the department, his first year running event operations here at Duke was my first year running the graduate student section from Cameron. He's from outside Philadelphia, Pennsylvania, on the Pennsylvania side of the river. I'm from outside Philadelphia, Pennsylvania, on the New Jersey side of the river. So our shared affinity for all things Philadelphia and Philadelphia sports And the fact that he used to say, like, I just got it, right? I just understood what needed to get done, got it done, and tried to keep even graduate student volunteer ushers as professional as possible in the 90 minutes that they needed to be, right? Yeah. Leading up to tip off of a game. And so he kept poking me to, don't you want to work other events? Don't you want to work other events? And used it as an opportunity to have some other experiences outside my lab and doing research. By the time I got to my last year of graduate school, I was the lead game manager for three sports, was working about five or six others over the course of the year, and writing my dissertation. I finished my dissertation, kind of serendipitously, a full-time position within the department came open. I said, hey, that's a great way to take a year-long sabbatical from engineering research and hardcore engineering and have a little bit of fun after 10 straight years of really hard education. And 11 years later, I'm still here. Having done almost, having been game day manager for almost every sport we have here on campus, developed all of our entry screening for our large venues, having built the operational plan for two venues after renovation and construction. And just having a lot of fun and having some great opportunities to work with things like GCMA. And here I am talking to you. So that's definitely a crazy, it was an interesting left turn in life. Let's put it that way.
I feel like you were always going to be guided this way. It seems like it. I mean, first of all, I love that you have a PhD in biomechanical engineering, right? Is that
correct?
And you work, although as we kind of mentioned before we start recording, I can't wait to hear about how you bring that into crowds and crowd safety and the safety, because it makes so much sense, right? Engineering is like one of the streams of the science. But I actually have to reflect on your very first event. I mean, I feel like when I ask other people, like, what's the very first event you did? You know, and like, actually, I feel like one of the very first events I did was like a little small, it was actually a student night because I was working at the Students' Union at university, and it was like, I don't know, 100 people. And it was just like one band playing and a quiz night or something. And here's Becca like, oh, like 2,500 people over 36 hours, and we're getting police in, we're getting the portaloos in. Like, that's how did you feel? I mean, that's a huge piece of work to do as your first one. How was it for you?
Yeah, I mean, I had been around it for like, I was like a person who was at the table, like checking people in for 2 years and doing some other stuff. And I had been around it. So you have an idea of like how it flows. And like, even I would say, not that I ran it, but like growing up as a kid, my mom she just retired from Princeton University, and Princeton University reunions is an absolutely insane event. Like the number of alumni that come back and the number of parties they throw, they basically take over the whole town.
Oh, wow.
And my mom did a lot logistically with reunions in addition to her like real job in dining and stuff like that. So I was exposed to large events at a really young age, hanging out with my mom at various like university events too, right? I mean, everything from their old school cane spree, which was like wrestling in the mud over a cane, like these like 200-year-old traditions, right?
I love it.
To like, and then just being around sports. And so it was interesting because I've just always had this way of paying attention to things and kind of seeing what was there and what was around. And so luckily, was very lucky in that the organization that I was with, that student organization, was actually incredibly organized. So they had everything written down, which helped a lot. But then just taking it, and basically you get about 6 months to plan it all by the time you're like, yep, you're in these positions and you run. And looking back on it, I'm like, man, how did I get that done? Like with literally no knowledge of what I was doing, other than I've been through it and this seems like common sense. So let's just employ that. somewhere along the lines, my dance teacher is a that I had as a kid would have been so proud, because common sense really can be yelled into a person.
So you got it from your dance teacher.
Who knows?
I love it. And yeah, as you said, like, you were kind of exposed to it, you know, with your mom and with others. So you were kind of picking things up by osmosis almost, and having that support as well. Yeah. I love it. And I had a question that just kind of came up and then it disappeared, but it will come back. So at the university, you have more than one venue. You've got a number of venues that you take care of.
Yeah. So we have a total of 27 varsity sports here at the university. We have 11 on-campus competition venues, something like that, pretty close to 11. And then a couple off-campus competition venues as well. Our venue sizes range from 400 to 40,000. Depending on sport. So our smallest is tennis and swimming and diving, which are about 400 or 500 in terms of physical seats, to our American football stadium, which is on the smaller end of college sports football stadiums in the US, of about 40,000. Again, our most famous is our basketball stadium, Cameron Indoor Stadium, which is 9,300 seats.
Yeah. No. Wow. So that's quite a portfolio to be kind of managing and negotiate. And do you often have, like, are they kind of situated close together? You said some are on campus. And do you often have, like, multiple sports on the same day? Like, do you ever have that kind of conflicting crowd movements or?
Yes. Yes. So we're generally speaking, football game days for us, because they are honestly probably one of the largest events that occur in the county. Those pretty much happen on their own. We try to not have other large athletic events or really anything more than like maybe like an inter-squad scrimmage going on or something like that on a football game day, just because it stresses the system too much, right? Like, we have all these resources that are devoted, from police to like contract event staff, so like stewards, right? Like you guys would have across the way. EMS, just traffic resources, right? Like, it just stresses the system to have too many things going on at once. Mm. But we definitely have other things going on basketball game days and things like that. Most of our athletic venues are all together on our West Campus. So from where I'm at in my office, I'm a stone's throw away from 7 different venues. All of which share the same parking, which is really fun. But yes, we do definitely have ins and outs. And then we have a couple competition venues over on our East Campus, which is about a mile down the road from us. And then we have a couple off campus. Our off campus venues are things like rowing. We don't have a lake big enough here on campus for them. And things like that.
Wow. That is quite a, gosh, that is quite a busy place, Becca. I'm really intrigued. can we peek into a day in the life of you in your role? What would be kind of a typical sort of working day or in the office, in the planning stage, and we'll get to an event stage?
Yeah, I would say I think one of my favorite things about being in this environment with that many teams and that many venues is I like to say that we don't have typical days. And I think that's one of the things that I've fallen in love with this being in events and being in crowd management, is every day is different. Every event is different. Everything has its own unique challenges and problems to solve. And at the end of the day, I love solving problems. It's what I think other people would say made me a really good engineer, is that I loved solving problems and creatively solving them. A typical day, like I would say, a typical day for me right now, sitting here in, you know, the end of March, I'm prepping for getting ready for really large events coming up in April and early May. So getting everything together for our track and field invitational, which is various roster sizes, but about 35 schools coming in. It's over 2,500 entries over 3 days of competition, which is happening concurrently with our university reunion alumni weekend and two lacrosse games in the venue that's literally right next door. And, you know, all those fun things that we just talked about with everything being on top of each other, planning for our spring football game, which is the next weekend, trying to start getting things together with, hey, how do we want a credential? Cause it's not the regular season. What are we going to do? What's the format going to look like? Are we doing a large student event? Are we, how much tailgating are we anticipating? Right. So try to operate it on a scale that's appropriate for what we think we're actually going to need. Mm-hmm. Right. One of the things for us is with that many venues and that many different sports, the dynamic scale that we operate on, even within a single venue, let alone across venues, is really, really wide. And so trying to figure out exactly what we need that is enough to make sure we're covered, but not too much that we're wasting resources, is a lot of kind of what we do. But yeah, so in addition to trying to get all the staffing and all that stuff, right, it's, hey, what public information are we putting out? What are the things that we influence? What are the things that we're meeting with other people about? It's a whole lot of communication and collaboration with what we do with between us and our external affairs, so like our ticket office and our marketing arm and those guys and our communications people, just to make sure we're trying to keep everybody on the same page and avoid surprises when we can, but they inevitably happen when you've got that many moving pieces as you go. So I'm really lucky. We've got an incredible team of 12 full-time staff within our department. We're athletic facilities and game operations in one. So we have a portion of our staff that focus primarily on facilities and maintaining facilities and projects within facilities and things like that. And then we have a team of seven event managers who I half joking, half seriously call my GMs of all the buildings. And so it's like we're one big complex and everybody is the master of their own domain, but we need to work together just like you would in any kind of like event complex as we go. And they're awesome. So yes, we do a lot, but they are all the people that make everything go on a day-to-day basis.
And so when you're... like kind of, you know, as you said, you're sort of assessing the impacts of the different events and, you know, do you have a sort of framework that you use? It's like a kind of like, without wanting to say a checklist, but almost like how we considered, you know, these 1 to 10 points or do you assess kind of on certain points, for example, like in terms of, I don't know, the profile or the behavior or like, you know, as you said, like the tailgating, which tailgating is the where they meet in the car park first, isn't that?
Yes.
Do you have, is there something that you work with, like a structure that you work with?
Yeah. So you hit the first thing, right? Like when we initially get our schedules, right, it's looking at opponents, right? So for us in college athletics, you can look at your schedule and be like, hey, look, we're playing these are the days that we're playing our main rivals, right? So for us, that's the University of North Carolina, Chapel Hill, which is literally 8 miles down the road from us. So those games always get highlighted because those are just a different level of intensity, not only with the fans in the stands, but on the field as well, right? So it's just one of those where it's like, yep, typically it's always we usually add a couple extra people anytime that we play North Carolina, just to make sure, I mean, as we go through, right. And even if it's not, you know, contract staff or police officers, it's like, hey, how about have an extra person from our own team with you, right. Just in case as you go, you know, then we look at, all right, like there's number one, right. Then it's like, all right, what other local schools do we have on the schedules that are either have, to your point, like a large tailgating culture, are really likely to drive? How much do we think we're going to have of a visiting team presence, mm-hmm. right? Because we can generally predict what our fans are going to do, but what are the visiting team fans coming in going to look like? Then we can look at those and say, okay, have we, especially when we're looking at football, which is one of my two primary sports. So I have football and track and field are my two primaries. In addition to a whole lot of other hats, along the way. But as we look at like football games, it's like, all right, what time is the game? Because that obviously influences behavior. A noon game is very different than an 8 p.m. game.
Yeah.
As you go through the day. What other kind of associated events are there with that game, right? Do we have a large broadcast pregame show coming in? So in the U.S., things like ESPN College Game Day, it's a huge 2 to 3 hour broadcast in the morning that happens prior to typically hours prior to the big game in the evening. Wow. You know, do we have a large other network presence on site, right? Like what kind of things do that have, and what is that going to do with drawing people to campus? What do we need to plan for around those events? And how is that going to potentially change the dynamic of what's happening with the game itself later in the day? Then kind of internally with us, to your point, we look at what does my event impact the day before? What else is going on that my event can impact the day of? And what else is going on that my event can impact the day after, right? And depending on what kind of event it is, right? For a football game, I'm looking at maybe 3 days before and 2 days after by the time everything gets cleaned up and going. For something smaller like a tennis match or a swim meet or a soccer game, 1 day before, day of, 1 day after, to your point, to be able to keep everything trying to flow smoothly. Do we have enough bus parking? Do we have enough car parking? Do we have enough, you know, is EMS covering multiple adjacent venues? Do we have EMS in every venue? Where are we at? What are we doing? And, you know, the occasional times where it's like, hey, we're playing in a facility that's not ours per se. How are we working with those entities for either as a tenant or whatever, as we go through? So, kind of the look at the team and the fans around each thing, look at the broadcast piece of it, and then kind of that basic, what am I impacting before me at the same time as me and after me, and try to work together to make those things work.
Yeah. And do you have, you know, obviously like with all of these kind of pieces, you know, because it's not like, it's amazing that it's not just like one venue or one team or like there's so many different things happening. And so like you must come across challenge after challenge after challenge, as well as opportunities. Like, are there any kind of sort of common challenges that kind of show up that you're just, you know, used to seeing now over the, like the span of your career or sort of, yeah, I'd be really keen to hear about what the kind of challenges that you hit regularly or irregularly with this work.
Yeah. I mean, I'll say even prior to the pandemic, but even more afterwards, right? Just the availability of staffing when you have that many things going on at the same time.
Yeah.
You know, even without, even like I said, with football being happening on its own, but if we've got a lacrosse game and a swim meet and something else the same day as a basketball game, well, our basketball games take a lot of people to run. Cause we've got exterior security, we've got interior security, we've got ushers, we've got ticket takers, right? We've got all those various positions as you go. So, all right, how do I get the, you know, 150 to people or so that we need to run the basketball stadium while we also need 15 people over at lacrosse because we're expecting them to be really large and, you know, maybe 6 or 7 people at baseball and a few people over here. And so being able to balance those things and then understanding and trying to work with our staffing partners to manage fatigue of staff if they have to do multiple things in one day and kind of help transition between the different operational stages of the day, right, is definitely really hard and can be a challenge. And I think that's no different than festivals or other things that are, right, long and winding. for us, just with the way we're situated, right? I mean, parking is always trying to figure out where you can park everybody when everybody wants to be as close as possible. And wait, we need to make sure that we have enough accessible parking. And then what do we do when accessible parking overflows? Do we have the things that we need to get everybody where they need to go? And what's our next step? And those kind of things. You know, those standard challenges as we go. And I think some of it too is also adapting to and realizing that you may have crowd challenges that you don't anticipate between your venues, right? So like if your baseball team is playing one team and our lacrosse team is playing that baseball team's rival, then you also like, it doesn't flare up a lot, but it's one of those things where you're like, huh, that could get interesting if depending on where you're at. Those kind of things are definitely things that we think about, especially with the proximity of all of our venues together. You know, we've had times where, we'll never forget this one. We had a really large basketball game and a very large, student kind of tailgate party outside, on the front end of the game. It's what they do, right? It's what we're all used to. And we, again, kind of in the lesson learned, we didn't put two and two together on the front end that the fact that the team, our basketball team was playing that night, that we had, you know, over 1,000 students in line for like partying all day, getting ready for the game that night, was the same tennis team that was coming into practice and had to walk through the back of the party to get to the venue to go practice. And then we realized we had to like redeploy some security around like our outdoor tennis courts so they could practice without getting harassed and things like that. And it was like, yeah, we learned from that one and haven't made that mistake again.
Wow.
As you go through, but those things that come up on the fly, right? That you're like, ooh, they're wearing the wrong color shirt as you go by.
Wow.
Yeah. So there's all those little things that pop up.
Yeah. And it's like, and the thing as well with like with this industry, you know, you can only do the best you can with the tools that you have. Like there's always going to be surprises, right? We're dealing with humans. We're not dealing with boxes. Like, you know, people make decisions. And so like, there's always going to be, you know, you can plan to your heart's content, but like, you know, to bring out the old military saying, no plan survives first contact. So yeah. I really want to hear how you bring your engineering background into this work.
Yeah. So I think probably one of the things that I use the most, so like my background was in biomedical and mechanical engineering. So yes, in biomechanics. And because of what I focused on. So if it makes slightly more sense, I did a lot of research in like orthopedics and in orthopedic biomechanics. So, hey, now I work in sports. All right, maybe that's like the slight bit. But I also had to take a lot of civil engineering classes along with it because of what I did. And so it was, I think one of the things that I've really brought with me is that idea of always having a safety factor, right? Where in engineering, it's always, is it 1.25, right? Is it 25? Can you hold 25% more? Can you hold 100% more than you need to, right? What do you need to do? And so really try to think about things like that, particularly when we're looking at around our venues, especially with everything being on top of each other, right? How are we designing queue systems? How are we designing our entry screening to make so that we're looking at throughput? And it's like, hey, if we think we need this much, let's make sure we have enough for, you know, maybe 10% over that or 20% over that. Because as much as we all want to sit here and say that it's going to be, hey, I've got 20,000 people entering my venue and 90 minutes for, or I'll make it easy, 2 hours for people to do it. Of course, it's going to be 10,000 people an hour, right? And everybody's going to trickle in all at the same time, like nice and steady, and it's all going to go. You know, whereas in actuality, right? All of us who do this on a regular basis, we don't need math to tell us this, right? Everybody's going to show up as late as possible because they get stuck in traffic. They want to have those last three beers out in the car park before they come in, right? Whatever it is. And so, sure, if you can do 800 people in an hour, per screening lane, that sounds great, but that's not going to help you when everyone's rushing in later. And so trying to build in those kind of safety factors and all those things, but also looking at it, you know, from as much as we can, right, around crowd density and how big of a space do we have? No, really, how many students do you really think are going to come, right? And try to think about those things. And do we have a space that's big enough? Things like that as we go. I think also because of having worked with numbers and done a lot of math for so long, I do a lot of tracking and trending of things like ingress profiles and stuff like that around our stadiums. And so like for our football stadium, again, because that's my baby, we like to joke that my boss physically built the building and I built the operational plan for the building. So I have with all of our ticket scan data by gate, by time, by day, like what every game looks like since renovation. And because I am a really big nerd like that, I have it all broken up into a lot of different things. So like I can tell you what average entry for a non-conference game in the month of August, if the kickoff is at 3:30, is going to look like.
That's so cool.
And then so what it does is it gives us a lot of and trying to do what we and trying to encourage our younger staff of how do you look at your ticket data? What are things that you can look at to do these things to be able to, you know, have an idea of what's your appropriate level of staffing? How many police officers do we need? How many medics do we need? Hey, if we're expecting this many people and it's 95 degrees, how many heat management stations do we need? What do we need to prepare for? Things like that. But using that a lot to look at trends and set those things up, you know, sometimes they're terrifyingly accurate. Like one football game this year, my estimate off my numbers was within 17 people of what actually scanned into the game.
Wow.
Yeah. And it wasn't like it was like 100 people, like it was like a 14,000 person football game and I was within 17 on my guess.
That's incredible.
I'm not always that good. Don't get me wrong. That's my one that I like tip my hat, I hang my hat on and was like, I quit. But like being able to do things like that when we, again, even within our own venues, we can operate on so wide of a scale, is really helpful. Again, looking at crowds, I think, I think my engineering background is one of the reasons why I'm so drawn to crowds and crowd management and kind of crowd behavior, not in the psychological sense, but in the physical sense. Because I'm like, this makes sense to me.
Yeah.
Because in a lot of ways, like, I know people are far more complicated than like water, right? Like water doesn't stop and take a selfie. But if it doesn't work with water flowing through a pipe or a series of pipes, it's not going to work for people either. Right? Like what happens when water counterflows? Well, it splashes and it blows up. What happens when people counterflow? Well, they get stuck. But it's also right. Like water will always take the path of least resistance as it goes down. So you can try to force it through something, but it's always going to go straight down the hill, even though you have a really nice switchback ramp over here.
Yep.
Right. And so I think that has been very helpful and valuable for me in terms of looking at spaces, being able to visualize the space, but also do the math in the space that is needed to do a lot of things. And so that's where I use it a lot. And I think also both, I have several friends that have gotten like advanced degrees in hard sciences, but don't necessarily do hard science anymore. And all of us agree that one of the best things that it any of it ever did for us is it taught us how to think. And because you end up having to design experiments or solve problems on things that, I mean, the whole point is to try to do something that nobody's ever done before, right? And so while there's so much value in being able to visualize and see it and change what you do, how many times do we all encounter the brand new event or a brand new venue, and you just have to kind of figure it out based on what you know and what you see? Yeah. And so I very much am comfortable with that idea and love that idea of give me the rules, right? Like, what are my rules? What are my starting, in engineering terms, what are my starting conditions? What are my base conditions, right? How much weight do I have on this beam? How is it like attached? What do I have to do with it, right? Looking at an event, how many people are coming? How many entrances do I have? Do I have to build my entrances? Do I have flexibility on that? What do you want to achieve with this event? So like, and then what are my rules? Where are my fire lanes? What's my fire code? Where's this? Where's that? And then be able to solve the problem on the backside of it. So
I love that.
I guess that's how I guess engineer events.
Yeah. No, that's brilliant. And it's funny that you say it taught you how to think, because that was the same experience that I had like when I did my undergrad. And I remember I did undergrad in events management way back when. And I've said this story before, but I was sitting around, this is after I finished, like the summer after I finished, I was sitting around a table with people who work in festivals and work in events in Ireland, and they were brainstorming a festival on an island, where it was a disused prison. And so they were talking about the feasibility of like having this festival or event on this island, and they were coming up with all these ideas and like logistics and safety challenges and how you get people on and off and etc. And I sat there and I thought, there's nothing I can contribute to this. Like, I just felt like I didn't know anything, and I'm like, but I've just finished a degree in events management. And I like went on Facebook, because that's what you did back then, and I complained, and of course I was friends with my lecturers, because as you are. And complaining that, you know, after 3 years, I didn't know anything. And he commented saying the degree didn't teach you how to do, it taught you how to think. And now, you know, fast forward almost 20 years later, and it just rings so true, because it's how you apply and like what steps you take and how you take information and how you process it, that information, to be able to then kind of create the scenarios or create the situations that you need to be able to kind of deliver, you know, deliver the crowd management plan or deliver the safety plan or whatever. So yeah, I completely echo that sentiment. And yeah, I mean, you know, maybe one day in the future will crowd safety be an engineering degree, you know, or will it be something that will have that kind of structural basis? Because, you know, it's obviously something different, right? Because, I mean, you're bringing in the psychology element, the behavior element, and you're bringing in like the mathematics, the engineering, which, you know, there's all these different disciplines, which is fascinating, isn't it, really? Because yeah. Like you're engineering your plan, but then they can decide to make a decision and do something different.
Yeah. And it's also right. It's exactly what you're saying. It's so multifaceted, right? Because you can do all of this stuff based on numbers, right? And then it's pouring rain. Right. And, you know, it's, you know, like they said at the, recently, and I know, or I've heard a million times, like, all right, where's the variable that controls the price of lager, right? Yes. Or where's your variable that takes into account how much rain you got the day before, or right? So there's always those pieces of it that can't be scienced and can't be, because there's always the human element to it. Yeah. So you have to be able to come at it from both sides, no matter how much technical knowledge you have, right? There's always going to be somebody who trips over the fluorescent yellow cable tray, right? That's clearly visible no matter where, right? What you do, or you can't take into account, you know, the fact that you didn't know that a player on the team went to the elementary school that they're running the promotion for. And now you have like, right, that now you have 2,000 extra people instead of the like 200 you thought you were going to have, right? So there's always those extra things that are fun.
And students will be students.
Students will be students will be students.
I mean, could you talk to me a bit more about, you know, this is, you know, the events that you're doing is student focused, isn't it? And it sounds to me, when you say you're scanning people in, like, do people get, is it just season ticket holders or do they get tickets for the game? So like, do you know how many are coming in advance or, and I'm assuming is it, are they all students? So like, could there be anyone who's just a fan? I don't know. Or are they all students?
Yeah. So all of our events are a mixture of general fans and students, right? Our largest student section that is available to our students is in our football stadium because that's our largest venue. We set a record this year for student attendance at a football game, or at least that we can tell, because we had, what was it? We were at, I think it was 6,000 students at the Notre Dame football game, which is really impressive given that in total we have about 15,000 students on campus. So, you know, about 40% of our student body was there. You know, at our basketball stadium, our total student section is about 2,000 of the 9,300 seats, 1,200 for undergrad, 725 for graduate students. So there's always a mix. And so they all get either a ticket. So for everything other than men's basketball, there's a separate ticketing process where they can claim their tickets in advance. It's all digital now. It's wonderful. It's my favorite part of mobile ticketing. And you know, they can get them in advance. So we've adapted a lot of our student entry over the last several years just to adapt to, hey, what makes sense? How do we prevent overcrowding of them and things like that based on where they're coming in and where they're coming from and trying to give flexibility. So we don't do, like, for football and our other sports, we don't have necessarily one designated student entrance. We're like, hey, you've already got your ticket, go ahead in whatever gate, like, you can enter any gate just like any other person because you already have your ticket, right? For men's basketball games, our undergraduate students have their own entrance and our graduate students have their own entrance, and they have a process that involves checking their IDs, scanning their IDs, making sure that, you know, they have done all the things that allow them to be a student and don't have any like student conduct things or whatever that would limit them from going to games and all that stuff. And so they each have their own process for that. But again, that splits the load. It splits the energy between two different sides of the building and allows us to fill their sections separately. But yeah, we always have a really good idea of how many are going to come. And we work with, as I mentioned earlier, the students that run those lines. They keep us posted on, hey, how many people are in line? How many people do you think are coming? Hey, when you get to this number, like, we're not saying turn people away, but make sure people know, like, it's very unlikely that you're going to get in if we get above X point, right? So it's something that we've really tried to do to help with trying to create reasonable expectations among the students. Because it's so funny being on a college campus where people need, it's like, yes, capacity applies to students too. Like, you know, just like you can't fit 300 people on a bus. Like a clown car, we can't put 3,000 people in a 1,000 person section, guys. And so trying to do those things to set those expectations and create those expectations has definitely been one of those things that I would say it's become more supportive from other places. As opposed to people being like, no, they're students, they pay tuition, they got to be able to go. Yeah, we can take so many of them.
And do you find, because the sections are actually managed by the kind of managed, you know, as they're managed by the roles or people in the like undergrad or postgrad?
Yeah.
Do you find that you get more buy-in then from the crowd because they're kind of being instructed or communicated by their peers?
Yeah, I love the peer reinforcement piece of what we have. And to be clear, they are absolutely supported by other people, right? They're supported by contract security. They're supported by
But they're kind of the point of contact.
Yes, but they're the primary point of contact. Yeah, and I think we do get a ton of buy-in that way because it's peers, it's peer on peer. And so, you know, when your peers are telling you to knock it off or whatever, you're like, oh, that's different than, you know, a yellow shirt security or something. We're also really lucky, I would say, and I'm not saying we're the only place that has this, but our student affairs department does a lot to around our athletic events as well. And so there are people that the students know that are, so there's peer reinforcement, then there's like student affairs reinforcement, and then there's the other levels kind of above and beyond that too. So, and we use that to help us in a number of different things, whether it's just monitoring student lines, helping that around some of the larger student tailgates, whether it's around trying to set expectations if we're about to win a large football game and we think people are coming on the field, you know, like things like that, just to try
how would
to
you
get
how would you
that
communicate that?
So what we did when we had it around our football games this year is we use the students, and then we have student affairs staff off on site that are kind of walking the aisles or down on the field being like, yep, come over here, go this way. Please don't jump down the 18-foot wall. Let's jump down the 6-foot wall. Okay, guys. And it was great for us this year because we had, I mean, our dean of students who just left for an incredible opportunity at another institution, but he was also a DJ. So he was also known on campus as a DJ. So when we would put, so when we had like him down front in front of the student section providing direction, it was like, yeah, no, like he's awesome. We're going to listen to him, right? Like as we go through, but they being able to use them and use the student leaders to kind of walk the aisles or talk to the people in the first 5 to 10 rows before they go somewhere or do things has been awesome. Even around basketball, it's just a matter of like them being visible. And then if there's an issue, just to be like, hey, like come talk to these guys for a second and then like set them straight and have them go. So we use it a little bit to try to get in front of problems before they're like really visible in the stadium or just try to, it's funny because there's definitely sometimes the sentiment of I'd rather deal with like, I don't want to deal with student affairs because that may put something on my record as opposed to like dealing with like contract security or whatever. So it's like, it's a little bit of bringing the big guns, but it's bringing the big guns in a way that is
de-escalating.
They know them, they calm them and can de-escalate it at the same time too.
Yeah. So would you have like, from like a logistics perspective, so, you know, they're in the, I love it, the bleachers. I love
yes.
Bleachers is such
it's
a
fun. Bleachers.
Bleachers. Oh. In the stands or in bleachers. So you would have like, you know, let's say they're all getting really excited, they're starting to migrate, and then the student affairs or the representatives would be down. Are they then kind of like, are there stewards or security like in kind of static positions, or are they kind of there as well in the background, and would they repeat messaging, or would they kind of back off and leave them have the conversation, or is it kind of a mix between?
It's a mix between the two. So we've got like for example in football, where our largest student section is, we have we use a lot of the same stewards, and we do this on purpose, right? Using your guys' words, we use a lot of our same stewards that are outside with them around the student tailgate. They then come in and work the student section as well. So as they come in, the staff follows them in.
Yeah.
And so we've done that on purpose because we feel like what that does too is that staff, I mean, we train them really well. You know, they get alcohol management training, they get the crowd management training, right? They get all of that. But they're also generally like, they know they're going to be working the student tailgate. So they tend to be our stewards and staff. They're a little bit more outgoing and a little bit more extroverted. So they're going to walk around and like interact with the students outside. And, you know, even as they're like checking what they're bringing into the student tailgate area to make sure like alcohol policies and stuff are being followed, like, hey, it's the same people that are allowing me to have fun outside are looking out for me inside.
Yeah.
And so trying to build those relationships. And it's funny because the students definitely recognize and build relationships with those security staff as they're outside. And then the same ones work around basketball. So they see them all the time, which we do on purpose to try to, again, make the faces familiar. So yeah, then hopefully it's not as like combative to have when you have to tell somebody no or change someone's expectations or do what we need to do. But yeah, we try to mix everybody together and we plan together, we train together, we run tabletops together as we go through. And
so are these
all sorts of things.
Like, do you have any in-house security or are they all contractors? Like the people that you do over and over again?
Yeah, so we actually have we have the only in-house security that we have would be our through our on-campus public safety. So our police officers and security officers through there. All of our venue staff is all third party from what we work. That's just how we're structured.
Yeah. And it sounds like there's you've got kind of that recurring people in that third party, in those kind of contractors, you're getting the same people back and back again, which is really great. So like from a retention perspective, that's actually quite good for a contractor.
Yeah. And I mean, there's always going to be like, there's always turnover, but we have a good base that comes back. Yeah. I mean, one of our, the perfect example, right, is one of our court security for basketball, who's now one of our student section security for football, and works with us. I have been working with him since I was a graduate student, running the graduate student section, 15 years ago.
Oh, wow.
And so, yes. And, you know, he is definitely what you would think of as being your stereotypical, like 6'7" ginormous. He's on the corner of the court for a reason. Right. But like, and of course, here I am, I'm like 5'3", and like, so he purposely puts his hand over his head to make me like high five him and stuff like that when we see him on game day. But like, it's relationships like that. And like, that's just one example of probably 25 I could name right now off the top of my head of people that have been around and we're able to build really great relationships with, and who then are very comfortable and encourage others to bring us ideas, bring us suggestions as we go through. So yes, they're not in-house employees of our university, but they're around so much that, and we really actively try to engage with them to be like, hey, did this work? We changed this. Was this okay?
Yeah.
Like, what do you think? How can we make this better?
Yeah.
Right. Like a great example of it, in terms of that planning phase of it, was every year before football season, we do a multi-agency supervisors night. So we bring in our boots on the ground supervisors from maybe a dozen different campus and on-campus entities. And we sit in one room and we review stuff before the season, but then we do a whole bunch of like mini tabletops to discuss stuff that either has happened to us and didn't go great, so we want to figure out how to do it better, or has happened to somebody else, or we saw online because it happened in Europe somewhere, right? Like, definitely use many examples from Euros, right? Like we were talking, like ticketing, fake tickets, right? We use all the sorts of stuff like that too. And a big one that we talked about was some of the physical challenges in certain areas of our stadium to crowd flow and what we've seen around large games and things like that. And we put it out, we talked about it, we presented the problem, showed the pictures of what the concourse looked like last year when we had these issues, and said, okay, guys, what do we think? Like, what do you think is practical? What can you, where can you redeploy people? What do we need? What are we going to do? Right. And sitting in that collaborative environment with all that staff, we came up with an alternate plan that we put in place. It had its bumps, but like that we then continued to adjust through the season, but like got to a point where we're like, hey, we actually feel a little bit better about this really tight corner of our concourse, but taking their ideas and what they see, and because they're on the ground.
Yeah.
Right. I'm in control. I'm up top. Like, yeah. I'm watching it on video, or I'm trying to watch it through my front windows to see what's happening, but it's very different on the ground versus yeah. what you're seeing upstairs. And so again, just trying to work with them on those things, or as we are around our large student tailgates, hey, what worked, what didn't, where do we need people as we shift through these various operational phases of this, where do we need people? Do we need to bring people in at this time? Things like that. And just, I like to think we keep getting a little bit better at it every single year, because we really do try to engage with the people that are on the ground and yeah. say, what do you need and what can we do to make it better?
Yeah, that is the kind of number one thing that I feel like everyone knows, but it doesn't seem to like carry out. And especially with venues, you know, over here, and the kind of, you have your in-house kind of staff up to a certain level, and then kind of supervisors and below, or up to supervisors can be employed, and then which is quite a common model, and then kind of stewards and security would be contractor. And there's like almost like this, like, oh, we're in-house and you're contractor, and this kind of, yeah, this sort of, you know, in-group out-group thing. And it just makes no sense, because like we're all working together to deliver the event. And actually, by kind of having that sort of separation, you're kind of encouraging that turnover, because if people don't feel valued, they're not going to come back. So the number one way of them being valued is to, like, what you're doing, like, bring them in and go, right, you're the one, you're the expert in this area. Like, tell me how it works. Tell me what's happening. Tell me what, you know, and build a plan together. There was a woman who I worked with. She was doing quality assurance on like the crowd safety staff of a venue. And she did her, I don't know if it was undergrad or master's, but her thesis in like what drives, like what kind of, not drives, what, yeah, like motivates people who work in security and stewarding. And, you know, like, is it money? Is it, you know, she had like a list of things. And she said money wasn't anywhere near the top. It was that what the top thing was, that people, that there's like a progression, and that they're being listened to and they're being valued, was like the number one thing that motivates them to work in our industry. So yeah, it's amazing to hear how you do that and how you work with these people, and also that they've been there like what, 15 years or even more. I mean, that's amazing. That already yeah. kind of tells you, doesn't it?
Yeah, and I think too, like, working with contract staff too, it's always hard, because when you don't work for the venue, there's always that hesitancy to say something negative or say something like yeah. doesn't work or needs to be changed, because you're like, well, are they going to listen when I'm like, hey, or are they not going to win and bring me back because they think that I'm like being overly critical, or I don't see what's going on, or I don't understand it, or, you know, whatever. And so, and it's hard, but like, and it's hard to break that, but being like, look, like, we want to know what's happening. Like, if something's not working, tell us, because how many situations, right, that we could probably all name or know that we've worked through or managed, where if the one person boots on the ground had radioed it up then in an earlier stage, right, then and been like, hey, this is a problem, or this isn't working, or this whatever, right, then how to, you know, what other things downstream from that could have been avoided. And so just trying to create that openness of, it doesn't matter what, like, doesn't matter what rank you are, doesn't matter where you are, how do you encourage staff to not just like see something and say something, but see something and say something to someone who has the authority to do something about it.
Yeah. And that, do you know what, that reminds me of one of the key points that came out from the Manchester Arena attack, the Ariana Grande concert in 2017, and how one of the key things was actually that hesitancy and nervousness to alert or share information. And actually, yeah, that kind of escalation process because of like, you know, being, you know, whatever they were kind of afraid of, but there was that kind of nervousness to kind of escalate or raise a problem. So yeah, it's so, as you said, it's like the sooner we know, then the sooner we're able to kind of make those decisions and reduce the impact as we flow downstream. So
And it takes a long time to build it. It really does. Like, we're not perfect, trust me, but we have, you know, you just, it's got to be everybody top down, right? Has to be bought into that to be able to make it work.
Yeah, absolutely. And I'm really intrigued with, especially because you've got so many of you have been there for such a long time, you have seen the evolution and the change in behavior in students, right? Because you're getting that fresh batch of blood in. and I will share from my perspective of teaching at the University of Plymouth, where I was as a student. So I've seen the change of Plymouth, like from when I was a teenager, and how witnessing in the southwest of England that one of the major changes, like since the pandemic, is loads of bars and pubs are closing, and the students are like spending more time like in the gym and wearing Lycra and drinking, you know, their protein shakes and like barely going out anymore. And I just was like, gosh, you know, this is such a shift. And I'm really like intrigued to learn what kind of shifts you've seen, you know, especially, I guess, since the pandemic in behavior of them.
Yeah, I think it's interesting because you kind of get some extremes in kind of both directions, right? Like you have, I wouldn't say we, like locally here, we haven't seen a lot of like that shift in like bars closing and stuff like that. But, you know, I think it's almost like, well, if we're going to have a good time, we're going to have a really good time, right? Mm-hmm. Or it's, we are so quiet and shy that my parents are going to be the one to call because I lost my laptop.
Yeah.
Right. It's like, it's like this huge range of things as we go. I mean, and so it's definitely interesting. It's as we go through, I mean, I think since the pandemic for us, definitely some of the, maybe not necessarily in students, but overall, like seeing a lot of the behavioral stuff that like we see other places. Mm-hmm. One that's going to be really interesting for us is literally last week, online sports gambling became legal in the state of North Carolina.
Oh, wow.
And so it'll be very interesting to see how that changes dynamics for us. Mm-hmm. Just being that college sports and particularly college basketball is so popular in this state, and being in an 84-year-old arena where you don't have all of the modern separation between fan and court that you would have in other places. And so looking at that and seeing how that dynamic impacts things will be very interesting for us. The fun one, I will say, if we're looking for positives for us, the students clean up after themselves so much better than they used to. I don't know if that was like a pandemic thing.
That's cool.
I swear. So in the spring of 2022, our head basketball coach, who was our coach for like 42 years, right, retired. And he made it to, the team made it to the Final Four of the kind of the national championship tournament that we have, the NCAA tournament. And of course, who did we play? Our rivals down the street, right? In his last game, that was one of the coolest events that I have ever had to put together a crowd management plan for. Like, couldn't go to New Orleans because I stayed behind to run this party and do all the things that we did around this party. And it was awesome. Don't get me wrong, except for the ending, because we lost.
Okay.
And so, but you go from this crowd that is like, the game is tied with like a minute left, right? And then it just fell apart at the end. But you go through this crowd that was like literally 15 minutes before deafening, jumping all over the place, like in our building. We're sitting there with student affairs staff being like, if for the students that were upstairs, like, go down the stairs, your stairs to get down to the court are this way, please don't jump the walls, right? Like, as we're going, to we lose, and there are literally students who are like, who they looked around, started seeing all the trash that was on the court, and just started helping us pick it up.
Wow.
And we're like, wow. Or like, we had our like our big student tailgate last year when the weather was nice. This year they got poured on, so a little bit different, who they were all lined up getting ready to go into the game, and in the downtime for the students in the back of the line, because they had easily right like an hour before they were getting in because of just the process that we go through and how we control the line as they go in, they went and started helping our cleanup crew pick up trash. And I'm like, I have literally never seen this before. And I've been on this campus for like 20 years. And so we were like, so maybe that's a little bit of like, there really is good in the world post pandemic in crowds, for all the other things that we see. But yeah, no, it's definitely interesting. Because it's the other thing from a crowd perspective, I'll say, is like, they're definitely aware of things, but they're not necessarily aware enough to avoid bad behavior, right? Or like risky behavior. You know, when you do a t-shirt giveaway that turns into just this mess of human beings, and you're like, and they're like, and the students are like, well, that seems like a really bad idea. And I'm like, yeah, you nearly trampled each other to make sure that you got your size medium. Like, you recognize that that's a terrible idea, but you don't do anything to not have that happen.
Yeah.
So needless to say, we've completely redone how we do t-shirt giveaways. we plan out everything, including like stuff like that, just to make sure. Cause it's
how have you redone t-shirt giveaways?
So the one that we did this year, or following that, one, we make sure that they are significantly further from the entrances or exits of the building than our staff probably really want, than our marketing staff really want them to give them room. And then this year for the big one that they did for basketball, we took our huge green space that's out in front of the arena, and we put the exact same number of shirts in both. It just, the sizes worked out that way. So it was like small sizes were in the front.
Yeah.
Half of it, the larger sizes were in the back of it, because we were like, well, and we kept one way crowd flow through the whole thing. So like, nice. It when the smaller sizes ran out, it's like, well, when a smaller size runs out, you're not gonna go, or like, you're not gonna go smaller for a shirt, right? Like, you're gonna keep
moving.
So we just kept them moving. So if it ran out, just keep going down the line.
Nice.
And you know, like, because it was raining, we made sure that all of the queuing was underneath the tents, and we had plenty of tables set up so they could do multiple queues underneath the tents, and everybody could stay dry, knowing that they would like naturally want to go undercover because it was raining. So we tried to think of all this stuff as we go through, and was like, hey, look, this is how we keep them from running each other over to get a t-shirt at the end of the day. But, you know, it's, again, it's that, like, everybody know, like, this is some of the funny stuff with, like, crowd management, as I'm sure you experienced. Like, everybody knows, like, oh, if it's raining, I'm going to run undercover, right? But they don't, you don't have the connection that everyone else is going to think that way, too. So it's like, why can't we put the autograph session under the football concourse when it's going to rain? I'm like, because it's going to be filled with people. No, it'll be fine. And I'm like, no. And then, you know, it starts raining, and I send a picture from a security camera to our marketing guys 5 minutes later and go, this is why I told you no.
I love it. One thing I learned recently, about the brain, and that the prefrontal cortex, you know, the part that rationalizes, like,
yep,
our amygdala, so that rationalizes, you know, risky behavior, the kind of bit that goes, you know, there's that part of it that goes, oh, this is fun, let's do that. And then the prefrontal cortex is like, yeah, but you're going to hurt yourself. That doesn't mature until we're like 25, which makes a lot of sense to me and my own.
Yes.
But also, like, yes, the kind of behavior of like teenagers, young people, where you're like, I don't understand why you're doing this. Oh, it's actually because like their brain literally can't rationalize. So I just found that really interesting, and kind of then allows me to be a little bit more compassionate when they do these insane things. And you're just like, have you had any of those moments where you're like, did you guys just really do that?
Which, yes. Yes. I mean, I feel like everyone has that, but like, it's just every day on a college campus where you're like, really?
Is there one that stands out?
Oh, man. Are there ones that stand out? There are definitely ones where I can think of people walking out of a venue and being like, I know you had far more clothing than that on when we let you in.
Anything recently?
Nothing obvious is coming to mind, but that's not necessarily like... No, I can't think of anything that good right now.
Yeah, that's all right. And I guess like, it's just, you know, because it happens so frequently, you're like, really? And then you probably doesn't even register because it's so normal for you guys.
You're just like,
yeah. And like, do you find that you need to try and find that balance between, you know, like, what the hell did they just do? And it's funny, and kind of going, what the hell did they just do? We need to intervene.
Yes. And I think that's where it's trying to walk that balance, particularly along like rivalry games and stuff like that, where you're like, okay, we joke around. We say jokingly, I think sometimes to the students of like, here's the line. Get to the line, but we're going to tell you as soon as you cross the line. And so, because you want them to be creative, you want them to be funny, you want them to be able to feel like you want them to be engaged in their events and their activities and doing all the things that they want to do, and, you know, feel like they are, you know, maintaining the tradition of the Cameron crazies and whatever, right? Like, there's definitely stuff that I remember we did when I was in school where I was like, I look back on it now and I'm like, ah, oh. Like, or like, that would never be allowed today. But like, so you want them to feel like they're part of that tradition, but at the same time, like, safety expectations are so much different. Like, even just today, like, you know, just like you, like, you know, I was starting university like 20 years ago. And so like, comparing what the expectations for safety and security and things are today versus then, right? Like I will never forget my freshman year of college. We're in there, we're getting ready to play our rivals down the street. And they had a brand new coach was here, and he came from Kansas. So what did a lot of people in the student section do? Well, it became Wizard of Oz night, right? and I will never forget, like we were waiting for the visiting team bus to pull up, and somebody had painted multiple bed sheets into a yellow brick road and taped them to the sidewalk that they had to walk down to get down to their locker room. And so they had to walk on it.
Wow.
Because we're a really old building, so we don't have a loading dock. We don't have whatever. It was just part of the visiting team path. And they arrived late enough that most of the students had to go get in line and go into the building. But we were like, I remember literally standing there with a person who was a leader of the graduate student section at the time, who is now one of my best friends after working with him as a grad student. And I distinctly remember him saying, is this legal? And we were like, I don't know, but we're going to do it anyway, because no one's telling us that we can't. And then inside the venue, a guy, a student who was in tent one, so they were the front of the line, right? So it was, they were a big deal. Jumped over the table, walked across the court, put a pair of little kids' ruby red slippers on the coach's chair, walked back across the court and jumped over. Nobody touched him. Nobody touched the shoes. Nobody did anything. But that was 20 years ago, right? So like,
you could somewhat
get away with those things. Like thinking about that now, I'm like, he would have been tackled, thrown out, like all of these things where you're just like,
controlled explosion on the shoes.
Right. Like all these things. Right. And so, but again, it's that, like, that's the tradition of our student section that like people know and think about. So it's like, yeah, but you can't do those things anymore. So how do you get to that line and define what that line is? And unfortunately, a lot of the times you can't always define the line until you know they've gone over it. Right. And then you're like, hey guys, back it off.
Yeah. And how would that kind of show up sometimes? Like, yeah.
Yeah. I mean, can't think of a lot of times it's like, if it goes over the line, we'll typically use like the next time out with athletic department staff and stuff to be like, guys, like, cut it, right? Or if an official says something to our game manager or whatever, like we'll go talk to specific people and be like, hey, like, stop it, right? Because if we're coming back over here again, like, you're gone, right? Yeah. Kind of a thing.
Yeah.
That's the thing that's hard, is that like you have an idea of what that is, right? Like you have your code of conduct, you have whatever, but then you're like, or they come up with something that is so creatively worded, the only people that understand it are the students. And then somebody points it out to you and you're like, oh yeah, we're going to take that.
Yeah. So are they allowed, like, do they bring in banners and things like that? Like, are they allowed to bring them in, or do they get checked before they get in, or
yeah,
do
they
check with you before, like, plan it? Before the event.
So they're allowed to bring in signs that can be held by like one person. So we don't allow things that are like absolutely ginormous.
Yeah.
They all have to be checked. They can't bring in like whiteboards or anything that they can like actively change as they go through. And so we actively check them on the way in. And then if we see somebody writing something in the middle of the game, like on a blank slide or whatever, then we just take it.
Yeah.
Because it's like, hey, like, yeah, you get, and you know, we have our basic fan code of conduct rules, right? Of nothing obscene, nothing vulgar, nothing that can be construed as an advertisement or a political statement or, you know, yada, yada, yada down the line. Yeah. But they can get really creative with them and it's fun.
Yeah.
And then there are times where you're like, where you look at it and you're like, I'm going to let that one go. Like where you're like, yeah, that's right up to the
end. Right up to the line.
I'm going to let that one go. We haven't crossed it yet, so good job.
So in general, it sounds like you guys have a really good relationship with the students in terms of like kind of managing safety together. Like it sounds like you have that relationship, which is really cool.
Yeah, I think a lot of it, I mean, yeah, a lot of it, like we work together with the students to make sure that everybody's making good life choices as we go through. But you know, and that, just because obviously like our full-time staff has seen more, we have more experience, we can start to see the signs of when something maybe is starting to veer bad before the students do. But we do have a really good relationship as we go through and we work with them to be like, hey, what do you guys need? What do you think's going to happen as we go through this scenario or that scenario? Okay, great. Now, how can we support you in getting through this and or whatever?
Yeah.
But again, we have a really, at least for basketball, which are like our biggest events. I mean, our student entry is done 12 to 20 people at a time. like they get checked, they're in groups, we go through it. And so like, we don't have we already have a natural system and process in place so that we're not seeing student rushes at doors or anything like that.
Yeah.
So they're it's setting the expectations. They know they're going to get checked. They know this is going to get checked. Then this is going to get checked. Then you're going to go through a metal detector. Then it's going to get checked again. Then it's going to get checked again. And then you get to go pick your seat.
Yeah. And we're at the end of a game, are they allowed to come onto the pitch or court, or is that not allowed?
Generally speaking, no. Allowed? No. for basketball, for us, because I know court storming and kind of those celebrations has been a really big topic, and I know we were at the center of one on the road. For basketball, the only time that we quote unquote storm the court for us is when we win a championship, and that generally doesn't happen when there are two teams on our court at home. And so it's so those kind of court storming plans are built into watch parties and other things, which are a very different dynamic than a game itself. For football, yes, we had a field storming this year. We've had a couple of them. I've managed three of them total in my 11 years through football. Or managed being a glorified word, right? You just do the best you can to influence it.
Yeah.
And it's not necessarily that it's allowed. It's just a matter of that risk assessment of if they're showing they're going to go and that this is what they want to do to celebrate, are you potentially causing more harm by stopping them?
Yeah.
And so at that point, it's, you know, how do you manage that risk? What risk are you going to take? And then how do you influence the behavior so that they do it in the safest way possible, I guess.
So does that, like, do you ever have kind of conversations with them before events, or is a lot of this kind of unwritten rules and expectations that built in over the years? Or like, would you like reprimand them after going, you guys shouldn't have done that? Or do you just, as you said, kind of gauge it on the day of the event of like, okay, this might happen?
For us, if we think, like, speaking of football, right? It's like, so for basketball, it's kind of an unwritten rule and understanding of that's just not something that we do. Yeah. That was set by our previous head coach with all of the success that we had, and has carried over into women's basketball as well. It's just not something that we do. But when we do it, we do it because we won the whole thing, right? And it's a big deal. And then we have our party then. For football, it's something that we start, I can honestly say, I look at the schedule from the start, just looking at opponents and go, okay, are there any opponents on this schedule where it could happen? Right. Yeah. And then I'll circle them. And then it's done. And then it's looking at kind of how everybody's season is going. And is somebody now really highly ranked? Is somebody like, where are we? What does this game? But the other part of it too is like, what is the potential significance of this game for us? Right. So it may be that we're playing a team that's not highly ranked, but we could win a conference championship because we win the game, right? Or whatever. And it's like, hey, at that point, yeah, they might come on because we haven't won this in 30 years, right? Or something like that. Yeah. And so it's a dynamic thing where we always look at it. We have written plans for it that are, hey, and then kind of leading up to the game, we'll talk with the key entities to be like, hey, if this were to happen, these are the things that, here's the progression of how this is going to go. Yeah. Prepare your respective staffs that are on site. This is what we're going to ask of you. This is what time this check-in meeting is going to be. You're going to hear from us at this time, and this time. We're going to react to what we see, but generally speaking, it will look something like this as we go through. And then we go with the flow and see what happens.
That's exactly, that's like the whole kind of genie gig, isn't it? Like you plan as best as you can, and then you plan your response. You respond as best as you can to what shows up.
Yep. And it's all about the awareness to realize that, hey, this is different than what we thought was going to happen. So I need to flex this, and this is how I need to flex this. Or, all right, yes, I said I wanted staff over here, but we really need staff over here now. Like, flip and go. Because, you know, goofy things are, it's sports. Goofy things happen. And you could think you win a game, and then all of a sudden, someone scores from 75 feet out, and you're like, well, maybe not.
Yeah. And then do you find, like, when you have responded, that the team on the ground have been able to flex, as you say, and be able to be responsive to kind of show up at a different location, or kind of that command of that instruction coming down from you in the control room, and the speed of response to that instruction, has it worked? Has it worked well?
Sometimes it has, sometimes it hasn't, but they're also, again, it depends on how much time they have to react to the instruction, right? Yeah. Generally speaking, they've done a good job with it, but there are always those times where you're like, yep, nobody could have responded that fast. So we do the best we can. Yeah. So we also try to make sure that we have the, like, relationship with not just our own crowd, but like with our visiting teams and stuff like that. So that, trust me, there is nothing worse than the conversation that you, when you have to go up to like a visiting team who thought they were going to win and now have been like upset, and you have to be like, hey, so all these people might be coming. This is what I need you to do.
Yeah.
Right. You know, we all have those plans, but it's about having that relationship to be able to have that discussion. Yes. Of like, hey, here's our plan. This is how we're going to get you out. If, you know, if something goofy happens, this is what we need you guys to do. And so, you know, or, hey, we're anticipating that our students are going to come onto the field at the end of this game. We've got staff in this position. Get behind, you know, have your handshakes, but then get behind that staff line. They'll make sure that students stay on where they have. You guys have this side to do what you need to do and go, kind of a thing. So we're protecting your bench. We're doing this, we're doing that, but this is what we need you guys to do. Yeah. So, and again, it's all about, that's just what we do. And everybody's got lots of different things. And there are some schools that allow their fans on the field after every game and stuff like that. And so everybody does it a little bit differently.
Yeah.
And exactly. You just hope that, and you just hope that when people come on the field, they're not doing it to try to pick a fight.
Yeah. That is, you know, that it's part of the celebration and the kind of the joy of it, rather than trying to do something deviantly. Oh, well, I mean, it's just amazing to hear, just get some insight from, you know, the work that you've been doing, and over, like, you know, over the span of 11 or so, well, more, right? Because you've been part of the university. So you really kind of, you've been able to kind of get stuck in and really get into the meat of, like, developing how all the systems work together, and, you know, how you interact with the crowds, interact with, you know, with the students, interact with the venues. It's really amazing, because I think one of the great things about events is that, you know, they're very different, and, like, a lot of people's experience is kind of event to event. So to have that kind of real groundedness in, like, the structure as well is really great, because you get insights that you kind of otherwise wouldn't from just having these kind of one-off events. And especially, like, what you're saying with, like, the data and really kind of analyzing, like, that's a, from my perspective, that's a really rare thing and a really great thing to be able to do and to work with. And also the relationships that you have over such a long period of time. Once again, that's, from my perspective, that's quite rare and something really special. And so I really, my last question for you is, I would love to hear what inspires you and fires you up in your work.
Yeah, I think for me, growing up, for me, like, sports was always this, like, happy place and something that I always had a lot of fun with, like, all these members of my family and being able to do these things and whatever. And so, and I think one of the really cool things about just events in general, but especially like for me, like looking at sports, is like that you, there are, every person who attends the event has their own story and you don't know what that story is, but you have the ability to maybe bring happiness to somebody for a few hours or a few days or whatever, like the duration of your event is, and allow them to forget about other things. And, you know, where for that duration of time, like that they are in, like you are, well, for us, or the way I see it is like being here on campus, kind of to your point, it's like, I get to bring all these people into my home and show them a really good time and then allow them to go home and then share that with other people afterwards, or like whatever that is. And so I think being able to do that is kind of the, what keeps you going, right? When you're on like hour 75 of the week or whatever, right? Is like, hey, remembering that, like when we host these huge games or we host whatever, like, hey, like that might be that person's once in a lifetime, like on the, like for us on this campus, or, you know, maybe they were a kid like me who was a Duke fan their entire life and never got to go to a game until they actually went to school here, or they didn't, or they've never been able to go to a game for whatever reason. Right. And so, like I said, like being able to welcome them into like wherever I'm working is like my home that day. Right. Trying to be like the best possible host that you can, as you go through. And then kind of outside of that fan piece of it, or the guest piece of it, being able to share my experience and all that I have been able to learn from the people that I've learned from and have come before me and have experienced more things that I have, and trying to be that person to help shape like our younger staff members and our interns that are in college, you know, trying to do event management degrees and things like that, to be like, hey, like there's all of this stuff out there, and like, don't hesitate to get involved in it. And like, these are all the really cool opportunities that I've had and the way I've been able to get better from, you know, going after these training opportunities and being on discussions like the control room and ESA's member meetups and all of these things. And I know like UKCMA and you know, all the things that similar things that you guys have, over on your side of the Atlantic. And just trying to do those things to like, to educate so that our events can be safer, but also be able to do it in ways where you're not just like saying no all the time, and trying to figure out those ways to like, hey, yes, we can collaboratively do this, and then try to make sure that there are people coming behind us that are also thinking about these things and hopefully make it right, like so that when our equivalents 20 years from now are sitting on a podcast talking to each other, they're like, what they did 20 years ago, gosh, how could they allow them to do this stuff? Off, right. And hopefully some of the problems that we're talking about are solved.
Yeah. Oh, I love that. Thank you, Becca. And yeah, I think that is really, that is what we're doing, right? We're creating and facilitating like once in a lifetime experience. And yeah, that is a really that's quite an honor, isn't it, that we get to do those things. And also I think the changing that narrative of being like the kind of safety police to being more of like, we're here to facilitate you having a really good time. And especially you with, you know, working with students and in that student environment of like, that's the number one time in our life, you know, that we get to just go absolutely nuts. So to kind of feel that we can go nuts, but that we're still safe, and like managing that and doing a lot in the background that they don't even realize that, you know, we're doing all these things to keep them safe is quite an amazing thing. So thank you
we want them to go nuts where we can see them and have the resources to be able to help them if they need it.
Yes.
There you go. The other thing that I'll, there you go. The other thing that I'll just say too, because it is, you know, the Safety Sisters podcast, is it is very cool to be sitting where I'm sitting now, knowing that when I started in facilities and in events operation, I was in event operations, I was the only female. And now in our like office, granted we were smaller, but still I was the one female in our office. And now we have on our events side, we are now the majority of us are female. And we've had of our interns that we've had, at least 50% of them each semester are female. Sometimes like they outnumber the guys, which is awesome. And so there's always that little bit of like happiness to be like, yeah, let's go. Like,
that's amazing. So. God, that's amazing. What a, like, yeah, what a shift as well in the, like in the evolution of your career there to get that change, which is absolutely incredible. And
yeah,
I mean, there's already stuff that we were talking about today, and we didn't get to, cause I was just like absorbing all of the amazing things that you had to say. So I feel like there's, you know, if you're up for it, I feel like there's definitely a part two to this conversation, because there's so much that I would love to hear from you and learn from you, and that I feel like people would definitely want to listen to more of. So and I think this is definitely, you know, the whole like being a woman in this industry, and in especially in safety and events, is such an evolving thing. And I think we do need to mention that, like, in the UK, the UK CMA, the UK Crowd Management Association, has elected its first woman chair. Doing a little dance. So Anne-Marie Shaviv, like, what a just absolute amazing milestone and shift in our industry and representing. So I definitely feel like the tides are turning in the right direction. And yeah, this is definitely something that we can chat more about. And oh, Becca, thank you so much for taking
absolutely
to speak with me. I've really enjoyed this conversation, and I really hope we can do it again. Thank you for listening. If you enjoyed this episode, please rate and follow the show and leave a review if you like. For more information on my work in crowd safety, research-led articles and other resources, see murphymorris.co.